Good morning. Happy Memorial Day to all of you. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Remember a cat I had named Ricky who played the piano? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I've been at this radio station a long time. It's been, I think, 2002 that Ricky passed away of a kind of heart disease that's very common, unfortunately, in cats. And we'll talk about that heart disease. We'll talk about Ricky the cat and how you may participate in a webinar. I think that's right? Webinar, is that the right term? I think that'll work, that myself and Dr. Chris Menges of BasePaws are giving together. And it's absolutely free, and it will be informative and entertaining. But first, Dr. Dana Varbal is Chicago's own, also the chief veterinary officer of the North American veterinary community. And you're important. So describe, I know what the North American veterinary community is, but describe how important that is, what this organization is.
The North American veterinary community, Steve, we are an organization that we provide education and information to veterinarians all over the world, obviously mostly in North America. We basically plan the leading veterinary conference of usually just under 18,000 professionals once a year in Orlando in January. We're also a leading provider of online CE and other professional resources for veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary nurses, and veterinary staff.
All right. Now, and I want to talk about job opportunities in a little bit. But first, the question that I still get every single day, many, 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 many times a day, including from WGN radio personalities, is can my dog, can my cat get COVID-19? And as a result, can I get it from the dog or the cat?
Sure. This has been a huge concern from the get-go. But the good news is there's no cause to be alarmed. There's no reason to think that pets or animals can transmit this to humans. The question of whether or not they can get it, we're starting to get a little more complicated, but it's still good news. We've known from the get-go that cats were probably going to be at risk for this based on the types of receptors in their lungs. And without getting too technical, we know that they've gotten some other respiratory diseases from people before. So sure enough, there have been a handful of cases worldwide where cats have tested positive. They may have even gotten sick a little bit with some respiratory symptoms. There have been no cats that died from this, and there's been absolutely no evidence that cats can transmit it to humans. Now, there's been some interesting experimental studies where cats are given a very high dose of virus and kept in very close quarters with other cats. And it does seem possible that they could pass it on to other cats in those circumstances.
And also, I know in the Netherlands, from farm to farm, allegedly, we're still trying to, I guess, or the scientists are still trying to discern what's true and what's not here, but cats may have passed it. Cats that are outdoors only may have passed it on to one another. And we know about the very big cats at the zoo in New York City, at the Bronx Zoo. Where tigers apparently gave it to their next-door neighbors, who happened to be African lions. By the way...
Well, the interesting thing about that, Steve, is we're not sure if the tigers gave it to their lions or the zookeeper gave it to everybody.
Right.
So still work being done there,
But is it possible that cats may be able to give it to other cats? And if so, is it good news that, well... At this point in time, this disease has unfortunately ravaged the world, and we're only talking about this now. It can't be too widespread.
It's not, and it's really good news, because it seems very likely that cats and maybe even dogs are going to be what we call dead-end hosts for this virus. They may catch it probably from people, less likely from other cats, but possibly. They may even get a little bit sick from it. But keep in mind that none of the cats that have been tested for it have been severely ill. None of them have needed veterinary care to stay in a veterinary hospital. And none of them have died. It seems like when they get it, they get a little illness. The virus maybe replicates, but probably not as well as it does in people, because this virus is really a human. It's really a human disease. So when they get it, they get a little sick. The virus doesn't do very well. The virus dies. The cat gets better. And that's probably the end of it.
Is this yet another reason, if you possibly can, to keep your cat indoors?
It is, actually. That's always been a concern, and it's certainly what the AVMA is recommending at this time, simply because we don't want our cats going around catching this disease either from people or, less likely, other cats, and bringing it into your house. And, again, maybe not even spreading it, but it's always nice to keep our cats healthy. I don't want them to get any respiratory illnesses, ideally.
Speaking of which, veterinarians are now being inundated in places from people who say, my dog is coughing, my cat is coughing, oh no, they've got it. Well, they may have something, but odds are I don't believe they have COVID-19.
That's right. Right now, the National Veterinary Laboratories are reporting that they've tested 150 animals, and it's quite a variety if you go on the USDA website, everything from camels to mice, because we're really trying to get an idea of what this virus could do in animals. The good news is, of those 150 animals, 4 have been positive. 1 lion, 1 tiger, so probably not a concern for most of us at home, and then the 2 cats from New York were the only animals that have been confirmed positive. But we also, Steve, as you know, have commercial laboratories that have tested many thousands of animals. And most of those have been negative. We maybe have 1 that was tested positive, but we haven't even been able to confirm that. So, again, the vast majority of this is a human disease. Maybe affects animals, but probably not.
And to be clear, that testing takes nothing away from the human testing, because I get asked that. Yeah, I get asked that all the time.
Yeah.
So, is there any reason? Here's the million-dollar question, although, Dr. Varbal, as much as I love you, you're not getting $1 million from me. But I'll
darn
ask,
it. Okay.
I know, but I'll ask you the question. At the end of the day, is there any reason whatsoever for us to give up our dogs or our cats?
Absolutely not. You know, now is not a time to be alarmed about this disease in our animals. We're so worried about people, and we have so much stress in our life. Now is a time to really enjoy our cats, our dogs, our pets. Take solace in them. Use them for the stress reduction. They've always provided us a good companionship and strengthen our bond with them.
Now, what if someone in your household is positive for COVID-19, or you're the only one in the household? What do you then do?
Well, what the AVMA is recommending, and I think this is a really good idea, is ideally what we do is have someone who's not positive take care of our dog and cat. And really, that is out of, I know it's been overused, but that's the abundance of caution answer. Because does seem to be a small chance that cats, maybe dogs, but more likely cats, can get this disease. Again, they're not going to become seriously ill from it, or at least there's no evidence to date that that's the case. But if someone is healthy can take care of your cat and dog, that's really ideal.
And what I told the AVMA, and I think they've run with it, actually, is for dogs and some cats, that, first of all, if you're the only one in the house and or if your household is such where it's going to be difficult to have someone else responsibly care for the animal, then think in advance, first of all. Try to identify who that person might be. Oh, my neighbor down the street can really, and maybe, again, not for every cat, for a lot of dogs, it's a staycation. They get to go to that neighbor or friend or relative's house for several weeks. For that friend who you really have to buy a nice dinner for taking care of your animal. But a lot of people may not have someone else in that household, or it's a studio apartment or some such thing where it's a very difficult thing to separate yourself. Might that be a good idea?
You know, if you have a friend or a family member who can take your pet while you're sick, this does 2 things. One, it allows you to relax and just not feel the stress of caring for your pet while you're trying to take care of yourself through an illness. But again, it provides that separation to hopefully prevent your dog or cat from becoming ill, which is unlikely in the first place. If you absolutely had to, you could probably take care of your dog and cat. Because again, remember, millions of people have this disease, and we only have a handful of animals that have gotten sick.
Yeah, I mean, you and I can both identify each and every one that we know is a positive. That's how few there are. I mean, when you think about it, and that's worldwide. That's not, that's a good sign. And I think that it's great that people are caring so much. But I'll tell you what I'm far more concerned about than people getting sick from their dog or their cat from COVID or giving up their animals because I think people are smarter and shelters are not seeing this. Shelters around the country, to my knowledge, are not seeing animals being given up because of COVID. I am more concerned if the economy continues to dip, that there's a reason for people to give up potentially their animals based on what we've seen historically when the economy gets really bad.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing to do now is to start planning ahead. You know, we always want to promote responsible pet ownership. Make sure you're not taking on pets that you maybe can't care for. But, you know, no one understands more than veterinarians that people's circumstances change. And sometimes when you take a pet on, you're in a great place and you're doing it for all the right reasons and things change. The good news is there is a lot of support out there. A lot of rescue groups and shelters have been able to provide things like low-cost food. I really think our low-cost vaccine clinics are going to come back very quickly.
Yes.
And so if you're in a tough place, really reach out because there's resources out there for you to help support you through what is hopefully just a temporary economic hardship on your part. You know, certainly the good news is that we as veterinarians are actually seeing the opposite. People love their pets. We want to take care of them, right? They're kind of, if things are tough, they're oftentimes the last thing that gets compromised if things are rough for you. And we're certainly seeing that at the vet clinic, that as folks have fostered and cared for dogs through this pandemic, that they're, you know, their deep attachment to them and the importance of their attachment to them is really showing. And we as veterinarians are busy right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're busy trying to both protect ourselves from owners who might have coronavirus. So a lot of us are doing curbside service and likely will in the future. But we're just busy taking care of all your pets, and we're happy to do so.
Dr. Varble, I literally have 15 seconds here. So we were talking about jobs. If you have a background in veterinary medicine or an interest, you're holding a virtual job fair. Can you give me the 411 very, very quickly?
Yeah, June 24th, we're going to do a virtual job fair because veterinarians are still hiring out there.
All right. And for more information about that, I'll provide a link when we do the podcast and on my blog, stevedale.tv. Dr. Dana Varble of the North American Veterinary Community, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Dr. Chris Menges is the Chief Veterinary Officer of Basepaws. And when I heard, Dr. Menges, that you are interested in helping cats with feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM, I was all over it because I began a fund years ago with the Win Feline Foundation to raise money so we can better understand and ultimately even treat this disease that we kind of really don't have a treatment for and is really common in cats. Really common in cats, I would argue, oftentimes underdiagnosed. So I'll begin here. What is feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM?
Well, feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is a heart disease in cats that is where the left wall of the heart begins to thicken. The reason that this occurs can be genetic, can be acquired in many ways, but it causes some very, very severe diseases. And you're right, it's extremely common. It's expected to be in about 15% of all cats in the world.
Yeah, maybe the number one cause of death between cats of about, or at least for indoor cats that aren't hit by cars, between the age of about 2 or 3 to the age of about 9 or 10, when at that point in time, we see kidney disease, cancers, and other illnesses that older cats more frequently get. But even older cats can certainly, and they do, succumb to this as well. Some cats diagnosed live out a perfectly normal, long life, but a lot of cats do not. And when diagnosed appropriately with HCM, then what typically happens with these cats?
Well, when cats get diagnosed with HCM, we really have to start watching them through various stages. The earlier that they get diagnosed, the easier it can be to manage with medical drugs to help improve that quality of life and help live a good long life from there. We're really trying to prevent what's known as congestive heart failure, where the heart isn't pushing as much blood around the body as it should, and it allows for the cats to be more tired or to develop fluid in their lungs, which can be very dangerous.
Well, and the other thing that frequently happens is they throw a clot or a thromboembolism, which is a long, fancy way of saying it almost looks like a stroke, but it's not. It really is heart disease, and they lose their ability to use their back legs typically, and it's very, very painful. And then you rush them into the emergency room in the ER. Docs typically are able to get them out of it, but then it happens. If it happens once, I believe it is likely to happen again and again and again. And these cats are suffering, for starters, but for also, it gets really expensive after visiting the emergency room two or three or four or five times, right?
Absolutely. You know, that those visits will add up extremely quickly, and it's just the emotional toll, not only on the cat, but also on the owner, is extremely tough. It's a very, very startling disease that allows for these long, chronic, hard managements, and then also these very acute, sudden, dangerous situations at the same time, which is why we're so keen to learn how to help prevent it.
Yeah, and if your cat has been diagnosed with HCM, we have something that you can do for your cat and all cats that we'll tell you about in a moment. So you might want to grab a pen. Also, it is the number one cause of sudden death in cats, which is what happened to a cat of ours named Ricky years ago. And for those of you who have listened to me for a while, you may know about Ricky. You may remember the time, for example, Ricky was on with Steve King and Johnny Putman to play the piano, because Ricky was a piano-playing cat and very famous back in the day and would do all these other behaviors, literally jump through hoops. And Ricky loved going out and about and was in the WGN studio. And Steve King still tells the story of the time that he thought Ricky actually threw the station off the air by walking on the console. Turns out he didn't do that, and Steve King was like, amazing. In 2 seconds, he did that, hit that button very calmly, and we were back in business. But 50,000-watt radio station, poof, blown away by a cat. So this was a very – and it was written about at the time in the columns and all that. Ricky was a very famous cat. National publicity was on all these Animal Planet shows. I said no to Letterman at the point that he was diagnosed with HCM and I wouldn't travel with him. Because stupid pet tricks at that time wanted him. I didn't think it was stupid. I thought it's great that the cat played the piano and did concerts to raise money for animal shelters around town. But Ricky suddenly died, once diagnosed, a couple of years later, not even, of HCM. And I began a fund with the Wynn Feline Foundation that raises money for cat health studies. And sadly, so the good news is we've learned more. But sadly, there is no treatment, really. There's certainly no cure for it. And this is what you're after, and you and I are going to be in a program that I want you to talk about together that all of you can participate in. There's no charge to participate in this at all, and you can help the Wynn Feline Foundation, and you can learn about HCM and learn about cats, and we'll reminisce a little bit about Ricky. Paul Harvey once featured Ricky. Maybe I'll play the Paul Harvey audio, which has become a thing now, when he featured Ricky. I didn't even know he was going to do it, but he did, and wow, what an honor to be featured on Paul Harvey. So we'll have all of that for you. So can you tell us a little more about this?
Absolutely. We're going to run a program on May 30th. It's called Feline HCM, A Silent Killer, and the Piano-Playing Cat Named Ricky. And this is a great time for us to learn about the cat that are affected by HCM, such as Ricky, but then also learn about what do we currently know about HCM from the genetic standpoint and from the treatment standpoint. What gets us most up to date as well. To help support the Ricky Fund, we at BasePaws are thrilled to be able to offer a $5 donation for every kit that's purchased until the end of May. And then we'll also have the be able to donate directly to the Ricky Fund itself. So it's going to be a great event where we help folks learn about how they can look for early signs for this disease, to start that extra preventative treatment as early as possible, and then continue to improve the health of cats everywhere.
And how can people participate if they want to join and watch our little PowerPoint presentation, you with the science and me reminiscing about this cat that I had an amazing, incredible bond with? Where can they find that?
Absolutely. It will be on our Facebook, on the BasePaws Facebook. Go to facebook.com and search for BasePaws. And we're pretty, like I say, we'll be nice and easy to find. We'll have the event up there, and then we'll be streaming it live to both Facebook and YouTube on that day.
Excellent. And I thank you for doing this to support the Wynn Feline Foundation so we could better understand this. Very quickly, if people do have a cat identified with HCM, how can they help not only you to study cats, but all cats?
They can help us go to our website at basepaws.com. We have a research tab there, and you're able to apply to get a free kit that we'll be able to ship out to you to look at your cat's DNA and add it to the increasing amount of data and support that we are using to research into this disease that affects so many of our cats in the world today.
Excellent. Chris, Dr. Menges, thank you so much. It turns out that pangolins, that's an animal that kind of looks like an anteater with scales, were recently identified as the carriers and likely intermediary host of the novel coronavirus we call COVID-19. Previous research has shown that infection with coronaviruses activates an innate immune response upon sensing a viral RNA in these animals that we call pangolins. How is it that they're able to do this? They don't get sick from it. So now veterinary researchers and others are looking at all sorts of different animals on the planet saying, well, how do they do that? How is it that these animals don't get sick? Pangolins, from what I described, but also because I said in rattling off everything I did, the likely intermediary host, likely that this coronavirus or COVID-19 originated in bats as the original SARS virus, sudden acute respiratory syndrome virus, did in 2002, 2003. That began in bats, and then a civet was the intermediary host, and then went on the people. And happily, that virus kind of petered itself out. This time, not the case at all, of course. It did not, and it has not, and will not anytime soon, peter itself out. And the original was probably from a bat as well. The intermediary host necessary for the virus to adjust to people was this animal called a pangolin. But the pangolins don't get sick from this. So how do bats not get sick from coronaviruses? What about this animal that most of you have never heard of, the most trafficked animal on the planet, an endangered species called the pangolin? Well, how does that happen? The researchers are now looking at sharks. Sharks! They don't get sick from coronaviruses. What is it about? Specifically, they're looking at the Greenland shark. Here is a shark species that lives like 700 years. Well, you heard me right. That was not, I did not misspeak. They live that longer than Larry King, 700 years. So what is it about sharks in general, specifically that species, that kind of knocks off the coronavirus instantly? So researchers want to know. And what interests me about all of this is that we are one planet. I've been talking about that forever, right? I mean, we need to protect the animals in the planet. That's the reason why. They are part of solutions to problems. In this case, you could argue they created the problem. No. By putting them all together the way we did in a so-called wet market, which we talked about, what was that, last 2 weeks ago on the show? Well, you're asking for trouble. And people like Dr. Jane Goodall, who I had on the show last year, have warned you're asking for trouble. Well, we got trouble, didn't we? But it could be that the same species that got us into this, so to speak, will get us out of it. That's it for today. Raising money through jewelry next week on Steve Dale's Pet World.